Last Thursday, on the Paul Benzequin Show, WEEI heard a carefully documented account of the sighting of an object in the sky. This morning, Paul Benzequin's notepad carries a report of that sighting and the events that followed.
Tom, Mrs. A.E. Clinton of Brookline called to tell us in great detail how she, her husband, and her 14-year-old son had seen an extremely bright object, 63 degrees high on the eastern sky, at 10:25 during the blackout of last Tuesday evening. She said it could have been as bright as the moon and was traveling at a speed her husband calculated at 22,500 miles per hour. Following a brief WEEI news report, the next caller, a man from Revere, corroborated all details of Mrs. Clinton's sighting and added that he had seen occasional bright orange lights shooting from the object. He was so impressed by the object that he reported it to the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. A lady in Framingham then reported that she had talked to two friends who had also been perplexed by a sky object seen at the same time. She promised to confer again with the ladies for additional details. Next, a boy from Medford confirmed that he and his father had also seen a bright oval in the sky. A Newton lady then came on the line to describe a strange object that she had seen shortly after the lights went out. This one was marked with a prominent cross and had blue and red lights on the bottom. Mrs. Sally Turner, a WEEI faithful, described the object vividly, matching all but its statistical details with the call from Mrs. Clinton. A woman in South Dennis, who didn't want to go on the air, said that from where she looked on the Cape, the object seemed to hang over the darkened city of Providence. Next, a sighting from Roslindale placed the object 20 degrees above the eastern horizon at 8:40, rising gradually until it disappeared at 9:20, possibly consistent with what was seen an hour and 5 minutes later by Mrs. Clinton. A Mattapan woman who described herself as a UFO skeptic told of a round, extremely brilliant object which she thought at first might have been a plane circling because it couldn't land at the blacked-out Logan Airport. She became convinced it couldn't be an airplane and remained mystified. Then Edwin W. Fogg, publicity director for the New England UFO Club, called to reject the sighting because of its estimated speed. He said that a good observer would have given angular velocity rather than true speed because he wouldn't have known exactly how far away the object was. Mr. Fogg predicted the sighting would ultimately be identified. He was exactly right, for the object was well known from the outset. When Mrs. Clinton was asked if the object was as bright as the moon, she said, "It could have been." Of course it could. It was the moon, the very object she had agreed to call WEEI to describe. Mrs. Clinton is really Mrs. Waldo Fielding, the former Sue Bennett, who is as fine an actress as we could have found to play the part. The moon she described was one day less than full, and by simply omitting its name, she caused a flurry of calls based on the most identifiable object in the night sky. Only Mrs. Turner, among all the callers, knew what that object was. It is fair to wonder this. Among the 9,000 UFOs reported over the past 10 years or so, how many were like this one? If you'll plan to call this afternoon between 2 and 6 on WEEI, think twice before you report a UFO.
You're a tricky one, Paul. You're a tricky one. Be sure and hear Paul this afternoon and every afternoon from 2 to 6. His number, Devonshire 86700. Give him a call, but make sure you got your facts straight because he checks on them.
They possibly meant the moon. The moon was very unusual that night.
That was about the only brightness we had around. That and the electric lights down in front of the Saxon Theater.
Uh-huh.
But it was...
I was on the toll road heading east, and right at 128 at about 10 minutes after 5, at first I thought it was the sun, but it was in the wrong direction.
Uh-huh.
It was bright orange. It looked just like a pumpkin. And then I thought maybe it was some kind of an advertising gimmick.
Uh-huh.
But it was definitely the moon.
The moon was very beautiful that night, and
we
set this thing up just for the same purpose, to find out...
How could anybody not recognize the moon?
Well, it wasn't until the day afterward, on Friday, that I got a call from a man in Marshfield who indicated that he definitely knew what it was. He placed the moon at that hour at 62.5 degrees rather than 63, so I knew instantly that he had done some checking and that he had pinpointed our unidentified object.
I'd like to speculate a little on UFOs.
Okay.
Do you mind?
Not a bit.
All right.
Your radio is bedeviling you like a UFO. Why don't you turn it down so we can talk?
Turn down the radio.
That's it. Turn down the radio.
I'm speculating on UFOs. I've never seen one, but I'm very open-minded.
You are?
And I understand you are not. from the evidence that you have shown. You
all right, we'll say
that they aren't.
We'll say I've got a closed mind on unidentified flying objects.
All right. 10 years ago, we never were out in space, were we?
No, we were not. Well,
right.
Let's see, 10 years ago, we had pretty good probes going up there with the V-2s and the early model American rockets.
All right. Within 10 years, we have sent two probes to other planets, right?
Right.
And we are approaching landing on the moon.
Uh-huh.
And NASA is seriously spending millions of dollars to find out if there is life on other planets.
Right.
And this has only come about in 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And, if we can send a probe to another planet, is there any reason why they can't send a probe to our planet?
None
we
whatever.
Have a monopoly on it.
None whatever.
All right. Now, what would happen, say, a million years from now, if we continue to exist as a progressive society, what can we do a million years from now? Quite a bit, can't we?
Sure.
Well, who's to say whether this civilization, there is not a civilization in outer space that is at least a million years older than we are? Is there any reason there is not?
None whatever.
All right. Isn't it very possible that there are UFOs around here studying us?
Not on the basis of the evidence at hand.
Well, even
of course it's a possibility. It's a possibility that some of the radio sounds that we pick up on these enormous television radio antennas that probe deep space. It's possible that the one now in, what is it, W43 or some section out there, that is sending us a pulsing message.
Yes.
Maybe several million years ago, these people tried to get in touch with us.
All right. Well, if we can send a probe to Mars, can't somebody on Mars send a probe to us?
No, because there isn't anybody up there to send a probe.
Well, you're so certain of that.
Yes, I am.
Well, I'm not.
Well, I am. On the basis of the last flyby we had, there's no life on Mars. Well, our planet right now is Jupiter. Now scientists are saying that, contrary to their prior beliefs, Jupiter might have a civilization on it. I'm ready to hear from that.
Very well.
But I won't just say that because a number of nitwits have reported unidentified flying objects.
All right, well, whether it's Jupiter or Mars or Venus, it's possible there can be some civilizations close by.
You have to rule out Venus, and you'll have to rule out Mars. On the basis
of the temporarily we can.
Okay. Now, what about maybe one of the moons of Jupiter is hot enough to support some life?
Or how about the other side of the moon itself? Maybe a landing base.
No, nothing up there, no atmosphere.
Oh,
we have to take these things rationally.
They're skills. You are talking in terms of our own progress. What about the millions of years of progress that we're going to achieve later on?
Sure, but
we can overcome all these problems.
Well, there are certain problems that you can only overcome on the basis of demonstrable evidence. And one of them, if there were any other life in this solar system, any other intelligible life in this solar system right now, they'd have been in touch with us by radio a long time ago.
Well, can you communicate, can you talk with a dog?
Well, I can talk to a dolphin. We're learning how.
I'm trying to.
Sure, we're learning how.
Can you talk to a dog? Can you carry on an intelligent conversation with a dog?
No, and I'm finding it increasingly and progressively harder to talk intelligently with Mr. Bashuk and Danvers.
Well, what I'm trying to say is it has been told to me by other people,
uh-huh,
that these creatures may be so far advanced beyond us that they don't know how to communicate with us, or we don't know how to communicate with them.
Uh-huh.
See?
Well, when you show me some evidence that suggests that as a possibility, I will listen.
All right, then if you show evidence that it's false, then you tell us that you don't show that evidence.
No, what I say is that there is no demonstrable evidence of any of the things that you have speculated about in the past 4 minutes.
Well, then,
and when there is, my mind is more open than yours.
All right, then please keep your open mind then.
I will. Thank you, sir.
Problem here.
Yes, Chief.
I would like to relate a little incident that I happen to be a part of.
Okay.
I was on the USS Boston.
Yes.
Over in the Mediterranean, I don't know, off of Spain someplace, I guess it was. I had a shop on the main deck. So I was standing outside the shop one day, and I looked up in the sky and seen three objects. And I don't really think I could define what they look like other than, you know, like maybe a spotlight on the sky at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And these three objects were flying down the port side of the ship. And there was one young man standing in the shop, so I says, "Come out here." I says, "What do you see up there?" He says, "Flying saucers and all of this crazy stuff."
Uh-huh.
Well, I says, "Okay." I didn't get too alarmed about it, and I watched these objects fly down there, and directly they disappeared. And pretty soon, here comes the ship's dentist walking down the deck, a full commander from down the Cape someplace.
Yeah.
And he says, "Chief, you'll never guess what I just saw." And I says, "I know, three flying saucers, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm of this opinion. If you've ever seen these UFOs, then you'll be a believer. I mean, they certainly
a very impressive object that you couldn't identify.
Well, three.
I'm perfectly willing to admit that there may be mysterious objects moving around in our atmosphere, but to speculate on them the way we have been doing, to say they have to be from outer space, or that because of their apparent movement they couldn't be terrestrial, or to endow them with all sorts of powers and characters and magnetic capabilities.
I think this is so much malarkey.
Sure.
This is not the point, but if you've seen the so-called flying saucers like I wish to believe I have,
mm-hmm.
they certainly would impress you. I mean, you'd be a believer in something's up there.
Did you see him in the daytime, Chief?
Yes, it was in the daytime, Paul.
Uh-huh.
But it just was thoroughly...
Anybody else on the ship would seen it with all of that radar equipment you had and the sighting devices? You could have made some pretty good measurements.
I would say that they probably could have picked it up on radar if it was of a mass, something that could be contacted.
According to Major Kehoe, there have been radar sightings of these UFOs, and they've been pretty well corroborated, but nobody has said what they are. And what I think is dangerous is to speculate on these and to get a lot of alarm going about creatures from out of space or the Russians having a secret missile. We didn't do any of this foolishness when we had the power blackout the other night.
No.
So why should we do it with some little dinky object that hasn't yet to perform a harmful act to anybody on Earth?
Yeah, don't you think that all the people over the last, I think since 1948, this UFO kick has been going...
Yeah.
And there must be some validity to what people have seen. Now, I'm not going to...
We certainly demonstrated last Friday that you don't need to have any validity at all to set off a panic.
Oh, certainly. You could create all kinds of havoc by saying you've seen little green monsters.
Sure.
But the only thing I wanted to tell you, Paul, is if you ever see one, if you have the good fortune to see an object in the sky and you can't define it,
then I'll admit
that. Believer, pal.
Okay, thanks, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Good to hear from you.
I'm just as skeptical about this as anybody else.
Okay. But, me, for example.
Right.
Okay.
Now, but I have here a little book about questions and answers on flying saucers, and one of the things that they have in here is a regulation, Joint Army-Navy Air publication.
Yes.
Which specifies that any pilot who reveals an official UFO report can be imprisoned for 1 to 10 years and fined up to $10,000.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'd like to find out if this is a genuine ruling of the Joint Army and Navy and Air Force.
What is the regulation number?
It's JANAP number 146B.
I have JANAP, all capitals?
All capitals.
Joint Army Navy Air Force something.
Publication.
Publication. Okay, 146B.
Issued September 1951 and declassified on 12 December 1953.
Well, then it's ancient history, isn't it?
Well, I understand from this reading this thing that it's still in effect and that.
Well, by declassified, it doesn't mean...
Well, it's
made public.
It's declassified. Yeah. It was secret up to that time, and now it's declassified as made public information. I'd like to find out if this regulation is still in effect, and if so, why? If there is no such thing as genuine flying saucers, why do they...
Well, your logic is a little askew there. It doesn't necessarily follow that because the Army, Navy, and Air Force choose to put officers in jail for 10 years if they... report anything that is classified as a UFO, that there is necessarily a UFO. They might be disciplining them for contributing to a panicky situation or something like that. There could be all sorts of reasons.
Well, there could be reasons, but this would tend to, in my mind at least, have some validity to the fact that there might be...
Pretty flimsy proof, because the Army is not about to allow its officers to lend credence to something that could arouse the public emotion. And this could be severely disciplined by the threat of 10 years in prison.
Well, there is also another Air Force regulation number 200-2.
What does that say?
And this specifies that all UFO sightings that have been proved hoaxes, practical jokes, and erroneous are to be revealed to the public, and all genuine UFO reports received must be kept from the public.
This is the big question that any reasonable person can answer. Why, if there is anything to this, won't the Air Force tell us about it? I'll check on both of these, if I can, in the next hour and report back to you. We'll find out especially if 146B is still in effect and what the thinking is behind it.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Alter.
Thank you. Encyclopedia Britannica yearbook for 1965, covering the calendar year 64, contains or bears under the category of patents and trademarks a paragraph on inventions, which reads as follows. A flying machine that can relay messages and detect and intercept enemy missiles was granted a United States patent in 1964. The patentee was aviation pioneer Major Alexander P. Dzhevirsky.
Yes.
The machine, called an ionocraft, takes off vertically and hovers as high as 60 miles up by remote control. It has no moving parts, but moves by discharging ions.
Wow.
Since there is theoretically no limit to its size, several ionocraft hovering together could presumably shield a city from attack. It could also be valuable as a, quote, flying antenna, unquote, for the military.
Sure.
Now, the ion propulsion devices are noiseless.
Anything there to indicate how they generate the ions?
No, but I know a little bit about Avco over in Everett and many places like it. I've been doing research on plasma. Ions are molecules which have been stripped of their outer electrons by high temperatures or high electrical energies, and this is precisely what they mean by a plasma torch.
I wonder what they would contain this stuff in, though, because at that temperature, every material known to man melts.
I wouldn't be surprised if the technique is not unlike that for thermonuclear work, the so-called magnetic bottles.
Great big magnetic bottle, and those things now are so heavy, I don't know if you'd ever get one off the ground.
Well, I don't know whether you're thinking of the extremely large cryogenic magnets, and to my knowledge, at present, that's the only thing in which they can generate these magnetic fields sufficiently dense. But he has a patent. Thing flies.
Well, we know that he has a patent, but have they got any up yet? This is quite common in high technological industry to take out the pattern even before you get the prototype going.
Well, it doesn't say that it's set to. It doesn't say here that it's set to take off. It says it does take off vertically and hover 60 miles up.
Uh-huh.
So I leave it at that for what it would make of it.
Well, you know, that would be a sensible explanation, and hopefully, if there is anything to it, there'd be no harm in telling us.
No, I think not, except that if they intend to use this for protective cover, they'd like it not to be known. But here it is. I would not have called you had it not been here in the public domain.
I'm glad you did, Mr. Whitmoyer. It prompts me to make an analogy between that and the announcement last week by the Russians that they now have an orbiting missile. They haven't orbited one yet, but they claim that missile is capable of responding to directions. It could carry a nuclear warhead and could be brought down just about anywhere within the course of 48 hours.
Well, I'm certain that this is not only possible, but it actually can be done. It's being done.
Sure. But, I mean, the point of making the announcement is to let the other side know that you've got it.
Yes.
And that might just have been the reasoning behind what the Russians did last week. We might ultimately choose to let them know that D. Sikorsky has come up with this kind of a device.
Well, I know one reason for the security and such a connection, that is this, that it seems that as soon as a defensive device or mechanism is known to exist, apart from any technical details being published, someone sets about imagining what that device is and dreaming up a counter device.
Sure.
So this may be the reason, but at any rate, I would guess that the thing exists.
Okay, Mr. Whitmoyer, good information, and I thank you for calling it to our attention.
Bye.
WEEI's number, Dev 86700, your hometown hall. I wonder if you can give me some information about Air Force 200-2, a regulation that has to do with how the Air Force shall deal with reports of unidentified flying objects.
Well, Paul, we have a UFO project officer here on the base.
Yes.
And any time that there is a report of an unidentified flying object, it is referred to this UFO project officer, who tries to get as much detail as possible from the caller.
Uh-huh.
And when I say detail, the time, place, location, size, shape, anything that would help in identifying the reported object or establishing any particular identity to the object.
Uh-huh.
This information is analyzed here, and it is then forwarded to the Foreign Technology Division office, actually, it's called the Project Blue Book Office.
That's the one I'm wondering about.
At Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where all UFO reports are consolidated.
Uh-huh.
Now, they, in turn, take this material, analyze it, and they do direct investigations. Investigations are conducted on every report where the information is complete enough that, that you could actually do an investigation.
Major, what I'm trying to clear up is the repeated report that the Air Force is playing footsie with the public and will not tell us anything about Project Blue Book, that you never get any satisfaction on a sighting when you do report it to the Air Force. And can you tell me whether or not this is true? Is there any classified aspect to the disposition of these cases?
No, there is nothing classified on it, but we do investigate every report. For example, Paul, since 1958, about 92% of the UFO reports have been fully investigated, and it has been determined that none of these constituted any threat to the defense posture of this country from any space or any foreign element.
Yes, I'm sure this would be the case. There are reasonable people dealing with these things, and the stories that we get are so easily inflated. We had an instance that we deliberately perpetrated here last week. The object that was sighted was the moon, and we simply didn't name it. And I'm just trying to find out whether or not there is any publication by the Air Force on how you handle this as a matter of policy.
There is a pamphlet that is published showing the results of Project Blue Book, and there are regulations that show how it is normally done, Paul, but these are not for public consumption.
They are not.
They are for internal use.
Uh-huh. But, well, I think I'd better have a talk with you off the air and get as much of a picture as I can of policy on this so that I'll be able to respond to these sightings as sensibly as you try to be.
Okay, well, Paul, you might find this interesting. It's very strange that they do seem to run in cycles.
They do.
For example, at Hanscom Field during the calendar year 64, we had a total of 21 UFO reports that were brought in here. Now, here at Hanscom this year, we have had a total of 70, and 49 of those reports have been within the past 60 days.
Uh-huh. Major, I'd like to call you back in 15 minutes. This is worth talking about, I think, and if you're willing, we are certainly willing.
Real fine, Paul. You can get me at extension 5191 at Hanscom.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
And Paul Benziquin, very shortly, will be in touch again with Major Derry Berry out at Hanscom, Hanscom Air Force Base in Bedford, to talk about the regulations that govern flying saucer sightings or unidentified flying object sightings, Project Blue Book at Wright-Patterson Air Base, and JANAP, which is a Joint Army-Navy publication, 146B, that gives a man 10 years in prison if he pops off about UFOs as sighted. Okay. We're waiting on that call. It'll be through shortly. You're Edward Derry Berry at Hanscom Air Force Base. Hello, Major.
Yes, Paul.
Good of you to be available again.
Nice to be
Major,
there.
Is the Air Force aware of an attitude of questioning hostility concerning its disposition with the UFO sightings that it processes in Project Blue Book?
Well, Paul, we have had some people who called and questioned, and we have tried to be as cooperative as we could with the press. You see, sometimes in checking these things out, we could conceivably find out that it could be a classified operation of our own.
Oh, I see.
That is going on.
Could you say as much? Could you say just that much to a person who has reported it?
Well, you see, now when I say we, I am not referring to here at Hanscom Field, for example. Let me give you a hypothetical situation that perhaps would clarify it.
Good.
We have now an airplane called the YF-12A. It is a very radical departure from the normal configuration of an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this aircraft was designed and test flown out on the West Coast, and the president announced the existence of this aircraft several months ago.
I remember hearing that announcement.
Okay, now when this airplane, in order to have the aircraft, we must develop it, we must design it, develop it, and test fly it, and know that the airplane can do the job that it was designed to do.
Right.
In order to test fly it, it's got to be in the air, and we can't always keep it over an area that is isolated and the people can't see it. So if they look up in the sky and they see this very strange configuration of an aircraft that is undergoing test, it's something by design specifications, it's very, very different from what they're normally accustomed to seeing.
So they might get all head up over that and report it as a UFO.
They could conceivably.
Uh-huh.
Now, you might recall, Paul, about 6 months ago that there was an announcement about a testing of a flying bathtub. Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
Well, the flying bathtub was a vehicle that was being tested on the West Coast as a possible reentry vehicle that could be controlled and actually maneuvered in the space program and could be controlled, re-entered into space. Well, I can imagine what my reaction would be if I had not known that such things were going on, if I suddenly looked up in the sky and saw something that looked like a bathtub.
I see. So of necessity, we've got a confusing situation, and people in all good faith might make a sighting of one of these objects, and you're not in a position to say, well, we know what that was.
Yes, that is the situation. You see, there are certain prerogatives that are held by the military, and necessarily so, in the interest of national security and safety, as we make such tests and what have you, and attain such stature in our defense program and in our space program, that our government decides when the time is right to make an announcement that we have such a capability.
Sure. And Major, could the Air Force say to me now, we have no evidence that any of these objects that have been sighted are extraterrestrial?
Yes, we can definitely say that, Paul. The 92% that we have been able to fully investigate, we can definitely say that. And the other 8%, the only reason I would not say it about that is that according to the Project Blue Book report, and this is what I'm quoting, we did not have enough material available, enough evidence given, in order that we could complete the reports and reach a conclusion.
Uh-huh. Major, I don't mean to hit you with this one unexpectedly, but I got it unexpectedly. You may or may not know about it. It's a Joint Army-Navy Air Force publication, 146B, as of September 1951, declassified in 53. The way I got it, it carries a 10-year sentence for any officer in any of the services who discloses the nature of a UFO sighting. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
No, I haven't, Paul, but I would not normally do so. You see, I am not the UFO project officer. I am a public information officer whose job is working with radio, newspaper, television, books, magazines, things of this type.
But that would be quite easy to check, a 146B, Joint Army-Navy Air Force publication.
Yes, I could check. I might have to go to 146B, Army-Navy Air Force.
Yeah, and I'm in no hurry for it. If you could just drop it into the mail or something like that, I'd be able to refer it to the conversation you and I have just had.
All right, well, I can check and see if I can get it. I know that it would not be available here at Hanscom, or I do not think it would be available. And what was the date on this, Paul?
1951, declassified in 53.
1951, let me check and see if it's available, and if it is, I will get it for you, and if not, I will certainly let you know that whether or not I could get it.
Major, thank you very much for this information. I think you've allayed a good many concerns that people have had about the Project Blue Book and UFOs in general.
I hope so, Paul. Feel free to call me anytime.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Major Edward Derryberry, Public Information Officer, Hanscom Air Force Base, Bedford, Massachusetts, and that friend is the horse's mouth. Reported here last Thursday?
Right.
That was as of Tuesday night, the blackout night.
Right. Now, I tried to reach you last Thursday, but I couldn't seem to. But I heard the report this morning.
You did?
And did anyone say that this was a vapor trail?
No, we said it was the moon. That's what it was.
All right, the moon was bright, and there was a vapor trail from, like, what attracted my eye to it was that I had never seen a vapor trail at night, and this was a vapor trail to the right of the moon.
Oh, really?
Pardon?
I was wondering if there's any possibility you could have been looking at that Japanese comet.
Well, I thought this was, at first, was a comet. I thought it was. That's why it attracted my attention.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it, and I seen at the right,
yes,
so the right of the moon, about 45 degrees, and I followed it, and it went over the moon, and way over to the left, there was a little tiny object moving at a terrific speed, and there was a light that blinked on it. And
well,
I was going to go back into the house and tell my wife and my son, but then I thought, it's just a jet. I just kept it on going. I went to work.
Sure. You know, the fact that jet would necessarily have been between you and the moon and flying in that direction could explain why its vapor trail would be visible at night.
Right.
Especially if that vapor trail consisted of frozen droplets, which could interrupt the flow of the light from the moon.
Right.
Must have been pretty exciting to see it, though. That's a very unusual place to see a vapor trail.
It was very nice, and that's what attracted my attention to it.
One of the benefits of the blackout. You wouldn't have seen it if there had been any surface lights on.
Now, did anyone report this that it would be a vapor trail?
No, nobody saw that vapor trail. We had Jupiter reported and Venus and several other tin cans and all sorts of objects, but nobody nailed it down as the moon.
Like I said, I've been trying to reach you since Thursday about it, and I said, I let it go at that. But then this morning's report, when I heard you giving it, I said, gee, maybe I better call and...
Yes, that does embellish it considerably. And I hope that there was somebody else who could see this, because that would be a very beautiful and unusual sight, to see a vapor trail in the reflected light of the sun by way of the moon.
Right. Well, I've never seen one at night. Have you?
No, I haven't.
I seen them during the day, during World War II, and that's why it struck my eye when I spotted it.
Good to hear about it, Mr. Lajeunesse, and thank you for the call from Bedford.
I was listening to your program, and I wanted to confirm what the mayor was saying about the Jeff Baker.
The vapor trail last Tuesday night?
Yes, sir.
Did you see it?
A friend of mine and I were outside, and we saw it over in the east.
Did you recognize it as a vapor trail at the time?
Yes, sir, we did. At first, it caught our eye. We didn't know what it was, but then we could see the jets, and we realized it was a vapor trail.
Very sensible. Did you also believe that the jet was traveling at an unusually high rate of speed?
Yes, sir.
How about that? Any idea what kind of a jet it might have been?
No, sir. But
was the trail single or double?
Seemed to be a double trail.
That doesn't suggest a heck of a lot, because so many of the jets now do have double jets, even on some of the fighters.
It was very wide. Many of the jet trails are, you know...
Yes, they are.
...too wide, but this was very, very wide. It was strange to see it at night.
Isn't it funny that in all the conversation we had about that particular evening, nobody mentioned the jet trail, and the other caller wasn't able to get through, although he wanted to mention it. And I'm sure you would have, too, if you had been able to get through.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Tim. You're a pretty good observer, and I'm glad to hear from you.
Thank you.
WEEI, open to all sorts of commentators, and that includes Tim Norton, Air Force Base again. This is typical of the kind of reports that somehow get associated with UFO sightings. Maybe you remember that Mr. Adler and Sharon, in all good faith, reported to us that there was a Joint Army-Navy publication called 146B, which would give a man... an officer 10 years in prison if he disclosed any information about unidentified flying objects without authorization or even with it. It turns out that that 146B, Joint Army-Navy publication, has nothing whatever to do with unidentified flying objects. What it has to do with is attack by a hostile force. Now, if you want to analyze how that story came about, it's perfectly simple. Supposing we were attacked by flying saucers. You see? No basis whatever. And we all go off half-cocked. Arlington is here. He's still wondering what happened, and he'll be able to talk to you about it very shortly. On WEEI now, Edwin Fogg, Public Relations for the New England UFO Group. Hello, Ed. How are you?
Hi, Mr. President.
Let me thank you for your letter and the information it contained. I'm still in the process of digesting it.
Was it of any value to you?
Oh, yes, I'm sure it will be. And I said on the air the other day, probably at a time that you weren't able to hear it, that we now have two excellent sources on all UFO questions to go to. One is Major Derry Berry out at Hanscom, and the other one is you.
Well, I appreciate the pat on the back, but and I'll try to help out in what manner I can whenever you...
What have you tonight, Ed?
Well, I was watching that object that Mr. Anderson described on the way home from work tonight, and according to the compass in my automobile, it's approximately west-southwest.
West-southwest.
I feel it's somewhat too far south to be Venus. And I am planning to take a photograph after supper tonight, if it's still up there, hoping that it will show up against the star tracks and show if any motion is present in relation to the star tracks.
I wonder if you're looking at the same one that Ralph and I just looked at. This is so big that there'd be no contest with any planet in the sky, and certainly no star. The only argument that could be given to it would be the moon, and we said it was about one-fourth or one-third the magnitude of the moon. Does that agree with what you're seeing?
I would say so, yes. Yeah. And I can assure you it's not the moon.
Yeah. Are you getting a flickering motion from where you're seeing?
More of a pulsing.
Pulsing, better, much
right.
better.
Right.
And is it somewhat ovate in shape?
I couldn't see it that clearly at the time because the car was moving and so forth.
Where are you now?
I'm home in Norwood.
Are you able to see it from there?
Just vaguely. I'm looking out my bedroom window at the moment. I can just barely make it out. If I keep moving back and forth, I can see it between the tree branches.
Ralph says it's much lower than when he's seen it before, and it does seem low enough and bright enough that it must be terrestrial in some fashion.
Right. It's moving, apparently, if it's moving towards the horizon in that position, it would be moving in a direction approximately at right angles to the way the stars would show up.
Their
relative motion.
So you might get something on a film plate.
Well, I think if it's settling this much now, I'm not going to wait until after supper. I think it'll come now.
Okay, I'll be interested to see what you find.
Right, and I'll either call you Monday or put a print in the mail over the weekend so you'll have it Monday.
Fine, thank you, Ed.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. Devonshire 8, 6700.
man knows what he's doing, and he's going to be able to tell us.
You're welcome to give it a try, though. Devonshire 86700, your hometown hall, where outspoken people speak out. My opinions don't count, but yours do.
The opinions and views expressed in the Paul Benzequin Show are not necessarily those of CBS Radio, WEEI, the sponsors, or the program host.